You have tuned in to Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, January 25th. I'm Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson from The Athletic. Since we last gathered last Monday, Notre Dame was put on probation. We didn't expect that news, but a little bit of phone calls ahead of the scheduled time by a former Irish assistant has put Notre Dame on probation. To clarify to everyone, maybe some of our older listeners hear probation and think no bowl game. Probation has different levels, and in this case, Notre Dame will, of course, be able to play a bowl game. A couple really fairly minor slaps on the hand. I thought it was kind of amusing that Brian Kelly turned down a picture offer with Lorenzo Styles Jr. and then said, what the heck? And he got caught for it, but that obviously is a low-level probation, a low-level violation for Notre Dame. So they'll still be in bowl games, and I really don't think that there's anything on there. Maybe you guys disagree that would impact Notre Dame significantly, whether it's on the field or off the field in recruiting.
I mean, Notre Dame's pretty buttoned up with recruiting in terms of how aggressive or liberal they interpret the rules. It's already, I think, they're fairly conservative about that stuff. I think that would just sort of make them maybe even a little bit more conservative, but there's not a lot of room for them to go there. So I think you just sort of got to watch, make sure you're fully compliant, because, you know, probation is essentially a yellow card in this instance. And as long as you can make it through the year without anything else, then it goes away. It's like points on your license. They get waived after a year and then you never speak of it again.
Exactly. It's like the first technical foul, the first flagrant foul. Don't commit another one.
When it's Notre Dame,
just even when I read it over, it's like all spring sanctions, like 14 days, limiting 14 unofficial visits this spring. I mean, if Notre Dame gets back to having fans in the fall, that's when you want to bring some new people in anyway. It couldn't have been. So I just liked it. The first thing that happened was when somebody, I think Pete reported it, and someone said, this only happens in Notre Dame. And then Pete pointed out two really good teams were undergoing this the entire year in Texas A&M and Florida. So that's how badly it affected those two teams.
Well, and were you aware of that at the time?
No, that's not. I had no idea.
You know that? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I remember reading the story. Indy Staples wrote it. The Athletic, just sort of detailing, essentially it was the coach at Savelle Smalls High School kind of ensnared coaches, because I don't know if he was trying to, like, it sounded like he was trying to impress Willie Taggart at Florida State, maybe try to get Smalls to Florida State. This coach is now on Taggart's staff at FAU, by the way. And I remember reading it being like, well, that's weird, but Notre Dame didn't really recruit Savelle Smalls, so it's not gonna get in my orbit, but here we are. It's definitely, I think, you know, Tim, you mentioned that it was like, it's at Notre Dame, their people are always out together. And I'm like, Notre Dame is the third school in this. And I wouldn't be shocked if there were more schools that get caught up in this recruitment, because everybody went out and tried to recruit this kid.
Also the news, speaking of recruiting, Notre Dame recruited Houston Griffith back to the fold. He had entered his name in the portal. Marcus Freeman, again, gets credit here. Brian Kelly as well for coercing Houston Griffith into coming back to Notre Dame. Notre Dame needs him. Notre Dame needs a better Houston Griffith. We've talked about this than the one that's been on the field for the last 3 years, but under the circumstances at safety with Kyle Hamilton coming back and no real clear-cut heir apparent to Sean Crawford as a starter, Houston Griffith coming back under Marcus Freeman and whoever the new safeties coach is. We know that physically he's capable of doing it. I think we're in accordance here that just when we see the effort put forth by him, it doesn't always look like it's comparable to the physical ability that we know he has.
Right, but there's not a downside. If Houston Griffith is exactly what he was last year, he can be a backup safety for Notre Dame. You would hope that they would have found a safety in the transfer portal.
He needs to be a more physical football.
He has to be a more physical player.
Basis.
If you want to see just why we say that all the time, it's not every snap necessarily, because he's not around the ball a lot defensively in the scheme, because he's in on third and long. So when I say like he had one stuff and he didn't make any big, I mean he's really doesn't have that many chances. He's probably doing his job. Just watch him on like kickoff return and kickoff coverage. It's just a bunch of
I think there are
patty
times
caking
where,
and, you know, it's
Right. There are times where you want to see him get involved in the play, just being physical about it.
Hey, in his only extended work, he and DJ Brown, Notre Dame, completely shut down North Carolina. So he was doing something right on the back end.
There's no doubt about that. And hopefully that's something to build on. Pete, your thoughts on this?
Asmer Bilal, Javon McKinley. Yeah. That's what you, if that can happen, great. And like O'Malley said, there's no real downside if it doesn't. And Notre Dame needs bodies at the safety position. Yeah. Like that position has been recruited so poorly over the last few years. That, I mean, they really need Houston Griffith more than they needed Asmer Bilal to hit, more than they needed Javon McKinley to hit, because the recruiting at that spot has been really scattershot over the last few cycles.
I would agree with that. I think Asmer Bilal had shown more,
there's no question. Right. But, you know, he was not somebody you're like, oh, this guy's really going to have a click and have a great final year.
He had a great year too.
He really did.
He probably closer to Javon McKinley in terms of having what Houston Griffith has shown through 3 years, what Javon McKinley had shown through four.
Yeah, and if you can get, you know, if somebody can get through to Houston Griffith, you have a good chance of having him for 2 years, not one. So, I mean, he will likely need 2022 to fully prove himself if he truly has aspirations for the NFL. So. Step number one was getting him back. Step number two is getting him in spring practice, getting him to play to his level of ability. Jafar Armstrong is going to play football at Illinois.
I think we all root for Jafar Armstrong, the nice person, but fun guy to talk to, who had some talent, we thought, in 2018. He hasn't been the same since, and slot receiver weapon is where he should be, not running back. And good luck for him, because he can play two more years and it's not a lack of effort for Jafar Armstrong. He just never really settled in at the position. And I don't know. He never looked the same to me after that torn abdominal muscle. He just did not seem like the same player.
Who were the other ones? You had Kofi Wardlow is going to Charlotte. I believe Isaiah Rutherford is going to Arizona.
That's correct. I have a list somewhere. Yeah,
David Franklin's been at Duke for a minute now. But, kind of go through the rundown of these grad transfers and transfers out where they're headed.
And the thing about, Jafar Armstrong, we know what kind of running back he is. We really still don't have any idea what kind of wide receiver he is, a slot receiver. I think it fits him well. He's certainly explosive enough and physical enough, to win those matchups coming out of the slot. He still has to go against Big Ten West Division teams with really quality defenses like Wisconsin and Iowa, but Northwestern, Minnesota, Nebraska, Purdue are also in that conference, and we'll see who they put or in that division, and we'll see who they play in the other division. But I think we all, Jafar Armstrong all made a positive impression on us in the times that we had opportunity to speak with him, and we want good things for him. Final thing in this segment, safeties coach. No further word on that. One would think that if Kerry Cooks was the guy for that job, he would have been named already. But again, we're talking about a procedure and timetables, which you guys all know how I feel about predicting timetables with hires. There are things that go on behind the scenes that we have absolutely no idea about. So however long it takes for them to get a safeties coach, that time will play itself out. But Kerry Cooks would still be the leading candidate as far as we can see.
Makes the most sense. And they could be just in a position now. I don't think there's any rush to name a safeties coach. Certainly not like there was with a defensive coordinator. Just wait till your entire staff is in place and then name the whole thing. Just like, hey, here's our staff for the 2021 season. Get down to GAs and quality control and all that. I think that's probably the approach that they'll take.
And maybe, Marcus Freeman maybe wants to make that call or is allowed to make that call. And
I would think he'd be involved in that call.
Absolutely. And maybe his first choice didn't pan out. Again, all these things behind the scenes that we speculate about and say, when are they going to hire someone? Well, it's a process. Notre Dame's, I realize, can be longer than most. But
I was just going to say, when Alabama had it opening at running backs coach, I would think that Lance Taylor would at least have a passing consideration or interest in that, being his alma mater. And I believe was 48 hours ago, they went with North Carolina's running backs coach. I have no reason to believe that Lance Taylor was a serious player there or wanted to leave Notre Dame. you know, and there's, you know, even with the Philadelphia Eagles with their staff change going to Nick Sirianni as head coach, really close with Tommy Rees. Is that something Tommy Rees wanted to explore? Like, I think you just let everything shake out and then say, boom, here's our staff for 2021. I would be surprised if it wasn't Kerry Cook's a safeties coach. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's a good balance with the staff, with Elston, as long as he's here to go with Freeman and Mickens. I think it's that'd be a really nice staff.
Yeah. Curious to see what ends up happening with Nick Lisinski, who everybody at Notre Dame feels good about. He has worked with the linebackers. Clark Lee relied upon him heavily. Little surprise that maybe he didn't get more play. Again, I don't know exactly how much play he got from Vanderbilt and Clark Lee, but he's an asset to Notre Dame. And if there's any way that you can keep him on before naming him a full-time coach at some point down the road, or maybe he has to go somewhere else. But I think Nick Lisinski has done a lot of good things for Notre Dame and has a future in Notre Dame. We'll see with that down the road.
On that note, though, there was a question on the board. What is his path to staying on staff? Same position? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the path for 1 year in the same position, right?
He played safety. Is that correct? Did he not? As a walk-on? I don't know how much that necessarily helps him.
He played as a walk-on.
No, I get it. Yeah, I get it. I get it. But, you know, I mean, a guy in that situation as a walk-on player – his mind is already developing as a coach. And so maybe he picks up things as a walk-on player that maybe the average walk-on player at that position might not have. You know, I'm just speculating, but we know that he's been a valuable asset. He was certainly a valuable asset to Clark Lee, and he's been a valuable asset behind the scenes in recruiting, maybe at the front of the scenes at times in recruiting. So we'll see what happens with him. Pro Bowl coming up. Notre Dame's got Senior Bowl coming up this weekend. Notre Dame has a few players participating in that. We'll see what happens with that. We'll come back with segment two, burning up the boards. We have a whole bunch of questions about a whole lot of things moving forward for Notre Dame.
We'd like to thank Michael Kloska for designing our new podcast logo. Michael is a Holy Cross College graduate who worked in the Notre Dame football recruiting office. He designed our logo at Irish Illustrated Insider, and he can design your logo too. Connect with him by calling 574-339-7200. Now back to the podcast.
It's segment two, burning up the boards. We start with a question from B.L. Caspern. Do you have spring dates? You have expected spring dates, and I'm assuming media will not be given any access.
Good assumption.
the latter part, good assumption.
Yeah. Tim, you said this the last podcast. I made some calls this in the last week. It's heavy expectation of a lot of April spring practice.
Maybe a late March start, but probably April. And I think different from what it's been in recent years when it started in early March, it should be a much more condensed 15 practices. No reason. After everything that everybody went through during the season, I mean, there's no reason to, at least for Notre Dame, to push forward with scheduling 15 practices. Our access, of course, would be very limited.
Yeah. So the only consideration, they get a little break if they start before Easter. That's why I could see that late March thing that you mentioned. I think Easter is April 4th range, unless I'm just
right.
Completely off thinking about that. But so remember, they like to have that little Kelly used to like to sneak one or two in, and then when everybody's gone for a little break, but they wouldn't, you know what, that doesn't matter anymore because they're not gonna let anybody go home for Easter and right. Come back. So that's irrelevant.
There's not a spring break, is there?
No,
there is for St. Pius and Stanley Clark. We know that, but there's
later, hopefully. Yeah.
How good are their football teams? Oh, okay.
If they combined, they wouldn't be that good. So.
Yeah, okay. Question from Irish John M. Any chance Ovi Ogofu comes back from the transfer portal, or has that ship sailed?
I mean, it was always one of the weirder ones for me because he, as Tim pointed out, I mean, he played a lot in the Alabama game. I think that had to do with Dalen Hayes must have been injured to play 10 snaps or whatever. But maybe Ogofu looked at it and thought, my likely scenario is what I've been seeing here at this program that has worked great for the program. I'm going to get in about 25 snaps splitting time with Isaiah Foskey and Jordan Botello, maybe just like he did that year, and he might want a starring role. It's always confusing to me when a guy that is going to play leaves, but he could certainly leave and play a lot more at a lesser program. And he has a free season, so he would have 3 years to play somewhere else.
Yeah, and it'd be a group of five program. I mean, if he really wants to play, go to a group of five program, and you'll have an opportunity to play. I didn't think that he was impactful as we thought he might be.
Agreed.
You know, because he kind of got overwhelmed by size among offensive tackles, especially against Alabama.
Well, yes, he's not the only guy that didn't have a great day. But I agree with you, though. It doesn't really have a position as Viper, but can he bring more to the table than anybody else? Like, Botello's going to develop, right?
Well,
he's just so rangy out there that.
Yeah, and then when they go, you know, I mean, we're going to see. It'll be very interesting. This is why it's important that we need to see spring practice, because you know that Marcus Freeman is going to employ three-man fronts and four-man fronts. I don't really see how Ogofu fits in a three-man front. He doesn't.
Yeah, he played a lot this year. Look at his snaps, except for Clemson. He could have been someone that might have checked out after playing three snaps against Clemson in the championship game. That's a drop-off from 25 and 24. But then again, what do we know? He could have turned his ankle, right? I mean, that's
– yeah.
There's a reason
I don't know,
do that. But
in answer to the question, I don't know that the ship has sailed. Pete, have you gotten any feedback on this?
I haven't heard anything, but it's so much different than the Griffith situation. This is an older player who's been beaten out by a younger player and maybe multiple younger players.
True.
Griffith is an older player with no younger players behind him.
It's a luxury ad, and it becomes important if Isaiah Foskey breaks his ankle in August or Jordan Botello hurts his shoulder in August. Then all of a sudden, Obi Ogofu's not there and could have used him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he probably sees the writing on the wall with Botello and Foskey at that position. And again, the changing of coordinators, I don't know that necessarily helps Ogofu in this situation.
I tell you what, there's no chance to ever bring this up again. When we interviewed Dalen Hayes before the Clemson rematch, I asked about Ogofu because he had been playing a lot more, and he gave me zero answer on Ovia Gofu, and he has no reason not to talk about Ovia Gofu, one of his teammates who I'm sure he liked. Like, in other words, and then Ogofu played three snaps. Maybe he knew something about Ogofu at that point, and he just did not respond.
Right. Go ahead, Tim.
DW Stull 81. Why no real movement besides Jack Cohn from the transfer portal?
Real movement? You mean like nobody has signed with Notre Dame yet? I mean, I don't know that we know there's no real movement besides Jack Cohn, but no, as of now, Notre Dame has nothing has been announced or nobody's put out a tweet saying, hey, I'm leaving the transfer portal and going to Notre Dame. I think we all feel, I know that the coaching staff feels that they need help in the secondary. There was mention of a potential offensive lineman, maybe a guard, which is what appears to be open. And could you use a strong side defensive end? Maybe, I don't know, but I have to believe that Notre Dame is not done when it comes to grad transfers at this point.
It's worth noting Nick McLeod announced his commitment to Notre Dame on May 11th.
And Trevor Spates was even after that, right?
So plenty of time to go.
And also, it's just look at the backyard. Jack Lamb, Ovi Ogofu, Jameer Smith haven't gone anywhere either. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of vetting going on and figure out who you want. And so, hopefully Notre Dame is shooting for the stars at safety and corner, whatever the best fit they can find.
A lot of guys graduate in May.
Right.
So you may have to wait for that to come and go, and then you can make a decision before then. But it's not I wouldn't say this is a rush decision.
Yeah, and of course, just a reminder, as a grad transfer, you have to actually have a degree to do that. So, I mean, I'm sure that there's movement. There just hasn't been any announcement. We expect, we can't say how many, but we expect certainly more than Jack Cohn being among the grad transfers that plays at Notre Dame in 2021. Jay Tafel, for which player is this a, quote, now or never type of spring?
We talked about one, Houston Griffith, his teammate or classmate, excuse me, Kevin Austin, who will be limited, right?
Certainly he'll be limited.
I mean, it's it's pushed back, so we're 3 months away, but it's the whole, I mean, the class of 2018 is a good place to start. The recruiting class of 2018 for this spring is in the now or never mode because they have good young players that came in after them, and you're okay bypassing somebody if they're seniors and they haven't shown it yet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's, you could answer this question the same way every year, right? It's an older player who's under threat by a younger player, which could even include Drew Pine and Brendan Clark getting passed by Tyler Buchner. It could include a bunch of receivers if Lorenzo Styles comes in and is really impressive. So there's, heck, if Ovi Agufo was here, he would be high on the list of now or never type of spring, right? Because you have Jordan Botello and Isaiah Foskey. So
a guy that I really liked when he signed with Notre Dame, really thought he was physical and really could bring something to the linebacker core, was Osita Ekwonu. And he really, and that's an example, Pete, of passed by younger guys. I don't know how inclined every individual player is to play at a small school just to play and bypass a degree from Notre Dame. But I thought Ekwonu was a guy that, I think that would be a guy that if he put his name in the transfer portal, people would look at his high school film and say, this is a pretty physical football player. A guy like Kendall Abdur-Rahman, who has not made any real headway, whether it was at wide receiver or running back, that's another name that would come to mind for me. Nana Asafo-Mensah was injured, but I don't think that he would have gotten on the field a substantial amount this past fall. So that would have been a name I would have said. I guess I'm saying it now, but I mean, he was injured. So, maybe he feels like his slate is clean walking in with a new coordinator. Anybody else you guys would suggest?
No, but the new coordinator does make this a really relevant question, because I just remember talking to Clark Lee his first spring, and he's like, I really wanted to see something from Tavon Coney and Asmar Bilal, and I didn't. And then he said, and then all of a sudden in the summer and the fall, it's like, wow. So Freeman will most likely be giving more than the spring for his impression, and I'm sure he's a wise person, just like Clark Lee, because Clark Lee would have buried Coney going into what became his breakout year. And he didn't start. Remember, Coney did not start. That was Martini and Morgan, and then Coney kept ascending.
And I would mention that there are four early entry freshmen this spring in the secondary: JoJo Johnson, Philip Riley, Ryan Barnes, and Justin Walters. So, could they impact somebody like Ramon Henderson or Caleb Alford? I have no evidence on that to say that, just looking at, again, young players that could, because they're coming in early, could get a foothold, moving forward.
CPAND, any rumblings from within the Goog on underclassmen that impressed on the scout team last year?
Well, definitely Kevin Ballman at tight end. I don't know how many snaps he got, with the quote varsity, but that's definitely somebody that Notre Dame was impressed with. Brian Kelly has spoken many times about JD Bertrand. Speaking of a guy that might be considering the transfer portal we know that Notre Dame likes him, but he just hasn't had an opportunity yet, to get on the field. So those are the two that come to mind first for me.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that I could pick out anybody else. Bauman was the first guy that I wrote down.
Yeah. Botello. I mean, I think they've been impressed with Botello's.
Yeah. I think Botello was a special teams varsity guy only, but I'm sure that he's an obvious one. It is a good question, because like way in the past it was ProSize and Torrey Hunter really showed. I mean, Hunter was there because of an injury. And Zeke Correll, we heard 2 years ago, was giving him fits.
Jack Kaiser were guys. Early on.
It's such a strange, it was a strange year because a lot of the guys that didn't play that were still clearly on varsity. Those junior wide receivers were still Lawrence Keys wasn't going down to scout team too often, I don't think. They called up Jordan Johnson because Ian Book made note of it. He's playing up with us now. Kevin Bauman is a guy that I think would have played for Notre Dame's 10-0 team had they just been missing one of those tight ends. So maybe that's just the best call of all of them. There was just no room for him to come up, whereas a lot of guys weren't coming up no matter what.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing a off-season, typical off-season series of stumbling blocks and building blocks, looking at each position. And you look at tight end, and they lost Tommy Tremble. They lost Brock Wright. You lose two of your top three tight ends, but I still kind of look at that position like a building block, because George Takacs has answered the bell whenever he's had the opportunity, other than diving for the end zone a little bit short when he could have, and his teammates gave him the business for not scoring. And, you know, and Ballman too with Mayer. And
he's good. Mayer's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at that as like you're kind of rebuilding there, but if you look at any tight end group with Mayer at the forefront, it's a building block, not a stumbling block.
Yeah, that's a job anybody wants, by the way.
Yep.
Nobody ever needs a tight end coach for 2 years. All right, cool. I'll sign up.
I got it. I can handle it. Nate West 58, any chance of having a coach's clinic this spring? Yikes. I don't think so.
No, that's impossible, right? Or implausible.
It's that's
bringing a lot of people. It's implausible. Yeah. To bring. Why would you have a Zoom coaches clinic? You're not going to bring
them. You just can't do it. I don't see how you can do it. And that's always something that we've kind of used as, you know, it's always good to hear coaches talk X's and O's.
Yeah, well, especially with Marcus Freeman coming in.
Yeah,
Had to go see, talk about it. That would have been the most attended. This would have been an incredible question to say no to last May. Will there be a coaches clinic next spring? But I... pretty sure there's no coach's club.
We're still debating whether they're going to play in Ireland.
That's right.
Those are good times.
But we always thought that wasn't going to happen. And of course it didn't. Much to the chagrin of a lot of people that I knew that were really excited about making that trip, including me.
PG Dumont, how would you gauge Tommy Reese's effectiveness as a recruiter?
Well, I think he played an instrumental part in Tyler Buckner coming to Notre Dame. And so that's a real positive. I don't think Tommy Reese's name is at the forefront of, you know, information that we get about what a great recruiter he is per se. I am assuming the question is being asked because it's being doubted that he's an effective recruiter. And I, you know, is it legitimate? Yeah, I think it's legitimate.
I think he's okay. I know there are people in the group that feel strongly that he's actually a really good recruiter.
I think that we know for a fact that he's communicated very well with the players on the team. That's different than recruiter.
That is coaching. That is literally
but
the
it is, I mean, it's such a significant part of coaching now that it's hugely important, more important than ever before.
Yeah, I think that people that are seen as good recruiters are often the coaches that are sort of play the game with 24/7 arrivals of like letting everyone know who they're visiting. I could put a fine point on that one. And I don't think Reese plays that game. Clark Lee didn't play that game. And I think Clark Lee is a really good recruiter. You know, is he Marcus Freeman? No, but I think sometimes our opinion of who's a good recruiter gets a little skewed based on the number of reports that you read about, like, Coach X visiting Prospect Y. Like, okay.
That is, I agree with you, Pete. That is way overplayed and way blown out of proportion. But what can you do about it? I mean, there's just there's no turning back from that. As long as Tommy Reese is a great recruiter with the quarterbacks that they want, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the interesting part of this question is like evaluation of quarterbacks. That would be an interesting conversation to have. You know, Tyler Buckner, really good evaluation. The 2022 class, I'm not so certain of that.
And you bring up evaluation, Pete, and I was going to bring this up because let me say a coach lands 5 wide receivers in one cycle. And one of them seems like a sleeper, and one of them's top 100, and one of them's top 150, one of them's top 200. And everybody likes the 5th guy. And then 4 years later, they have 1 touchdown. Did he do a poor job of recruiting them, of evaluating them? And is it his fault as an evaluator when everybody would have wanted three of them? Right? I mean, no one was turning down Kevin Austin and Braden Lindsay. It's not a bad evaluation.
Yeah.
That's Lawrence Keys certainly seemed like a player when he hit campus and was beating players that went to the playoff game all August. Right? Lawrence Keys was the best looking freshman out of all those guys. Right. In 2018, it's the best secondary Notre Dame has had.
And it doesn't look like he's gotten any stronger than he was.
It doesn't. So therefore, it's hard to look at someone in recruiting and evaluation, all that, just in a little prism we have.
Let me correct something I said about Reese. He's not just a quarterback's coach, of course. He's the offensive coordinator. So he has to be able to have an impact on, you know, wide receiver prospects as well. Irish from A2, what are your expectations for the quarterback competition next year? Does Jack Cohn win the job with little resistance? Have you seen anything from Clark or Pine to believe they will compete? Do you expect Buckner to push for playing time? We got a lot in there.
Yes. Yeah, I think my expectations are that it will continue throughout the year, that Jack Cohn wins the job for Florida State, that Buckner will push for playing time as the season progresses. But let's keep in mind, he hasn't played a football game since November 2019. And, you know, that happens a lot in college football, but he was also a much younger player back then. This will be quite an adjustment for him. The Clark-Pine thing is an interesting dynamic because I don't think Clark is healthy enough to compete. So I don't even know I don't think he has a shot at the quarterback competition this year. If they just clean up his knee and he misses spring, he's not winning the job at quarterback when Tyler Buckner and Drew Pine are there the whole spring with Jack Cohn, right?
Yeah.
He has to be fine to have a chance, I would say, is the only way of looking at it.
Cohn's going to win the job. I mean, I expect Cohn to win the job because he's just more experienced. He's going to understand. He's just going to have a better understanding of everything Tommy Reese is saying to him than anybody else. Now, apparently,
Drew Pine. He's the best chance to win.
Right. Yeah, he gives
Notre Dame the best chance to win.
Right, he gives them the best chance to win out of the chute. Tommy Reese talked about Drew Pine. I talked to him about this in April of last year about what a quick study is and how well he understands the game. But I'm sure that he was given a snapshot of what needed to be done at the quarterback position. And Clark's always been a guy that they liked his savvy. I know Chip Long liked his toughness. There was the story of the broken finger. Hey, how come you're throwing the ball weird today? Well, because I broke my finger yesterday, coach, but he hadn't said anything about it. So, you know, they like that about him. If Clark can bounce back from the knee, if anybody can, it's him. But Jack Cohn goes into this with a huge advantage because of all the college football playing experience, winning a Big Ten crown, going to the Rose Bowl, playing in the Rose Bowl, competing with Oregon, almost beating Oregon. He just has such a significant advantage. But I do expect Buckner. You know, he should be a really quick study. He doesn't have a ton of playing experience from high school. And you mentioned the long break between playing games, but I would expect him to certainly compete for playing time, if not the starting job.
Soctober 2. Are we going to see Chris Tyree or Kyron Williams take a theoretic/precise career path where one of them turns into a full-time slot receiver? We need the most dangerous guys on the field together. It would also prepare them or being an NFL third down running back like the names mentioned above.
I think I'd go berserk if one of those guys got moved full time to slot receiver. I mean, there are ways around that. Kyron Williams is an established quality running back, and Chris Tyree shows all the signs of doing that. You keep them both at running back, and you have a fairly significant portion of your practices moving forward of them playing in the slot, but you don't move them out of the running back position unless Logan Diggs and Audric Estime come in and are outstanding right from the very beginning.
I think it's worth remembering, like, you got a lot for, I don't know how many carries Notre Dame has a team last year, but you want to try to get to something close to that number, but your quarterback is not going to count for nearly as many.
Exactly.
So those carries got to go somewhere, and hopefully they go to Chris Tyree, who's a running back.
Yeah, I think the good idea is to involve Chris Tyree and Kyron Williams in the passing game in the modern passing game going forward as running backs.
They caught 12 passes against Alabama. So
yeah, well, that was more of a help us out. We need something desperately.
No, I get it. Tyreek caught half of his passes this year against Alabama.
That was a nice play too. It was a best design play of the year, and he stepped out of bounds. No offense, but that drove me crazy. I can't handle it. All right, there's Donnelly 34-34. Who moves out to big end, MTA or Riley Mills?
You know, again, I think we have to see how Marcus Freeman plays this. He's going to use a variety of fronts. Mm-hmm. So if it's a 4-3, you know, it would probably be MTA. If it's a 3-4, I think they're both candidates for that.
I would say that, yeah, if you just ask me who looks like a big end most, Riley Mills or MTA, it's Riley Mills by a wide margin. That doesn't mean it's going to play out that way, but that would just sort of be my first take on that before seeing anything in spring.
Go ahead, Tim.
I just think Riley Mills is so much quicker inside than he would be outside. Does that make sense? Like, I like what he can do inside, and it's almost as if I'm overhyping what I saw too much from Riley Mills getting better as the season went on, where I just want to see that growth continue in one spot. That's really probably it. I don't want to see Riley Mills move out of what I thought he started shedding blocks and becoming a guy that was making some plays, albeit in small doses.
Yeah, I don't think he moves out of it as much as those guys play a dual role in practice situations because of the front. I don't know, Pete. I kind of look at MTA as, and I don't know if this, I mean, it probably doesn't necessarily show itself in their actual height, their measurement, but I think his length looks more like a strong side defensive end in a 4-3 than Mills's does. But I think they're both going to play a ton this year. We need to talk to Marcus Freeman, and God knows when that will happen. And we need to see.
When Mills and MTA both start against Florida State, we can talk to Brian Kelly about what Marcus Freeman did with them. That's when we'll talk to Marcus Freeman. Playoffs next year, right? They got to get in the playoffs. We'll talk to Marcus Freeman.
Denver Maximus, I understand we are unaware of the type of defense Freeman will run, but any thoughts on who the starting linebackers may be next year? Buck never seemed to settle last year, and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is gone. Any thoughts?
Andrew White would be one. Beyond that, I feel like it's pretty wide open, including Bo Bauer maybe moving to the Buck. I don't know how Freeman's responsibilities for those positions differ from Clark Lee. I would think that Palmuala maybe would have an opportunity if Rover was similar to how it was played. He had a couple moments where you're like, oh, okay, this guy could do it. But I don't know, long way to go. I'm reluctant to even guess just because you don't know how Freeman wants the linebackers to play.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any way that White comes off the field, at least on first and second down.
I'd be floored.
Yeah, I think Maris Liafau has shown enough to me, which means absolutely nothing, but I think Liafau has shown enough to me since my opinion was asked, that he's going to play a lot of football. I think we were always a little bit surprised at how much Shane Simon, I think he had 8 starts. We're a little surprised by that. And Jack Kaiser fits in there somehow as well. That's why I mentioned the Cedric Kwanu before. How in the world does he get on the field unless Marcus Freeman just evaluates him completely differently than Clark Lee did?
I mean, Drew White is going to start for Notre Dame next year. Yes. I am out. Whoever's listening to this and thinks Drew White's not starting at Notre Dame, you are wrong and you're misevaluating the sport. Okay, Drew White will start for Notre Dame's football team. I like Liafau as well. For a full rundown of the Buck this year versus the Buck Asmar Bilal version and the 3 or 4 guys that played it this year, you can go to Monday Musings on IrishIllustrated.com. I did that for Tim Priester because I am asking the people to subscribe to read it. I believe it is.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, well,
I don't have to be the bad guy this time.
Liafau, I like Liafau being in there somehow. It's just the best part of this is I don't understand how it's going to happen, but he'll be there somehow. He's an athletic guy. I mean,
yeah.
Pete's point, I'm sorry, Mawala, I mean, he's got a long road to recovery, though, too, right? That's a tough.
But the Achilles was training camp?
Achilles was game number two, so that was like the 19th. But that's just Achilles feels like it's hard to fight.
Yeah, that's a horrible injury to suffer. I still, you know, does Kaiser have a role in at Rover? I think there's a lot of good football there. By the way, veering off, Tim, talking about what we were talking about here earlier in the week or last week or whenever I did it, a story on the captains. And somebody right away said, you didn't mention Bo Bauer, and he probably should have been maybe on the list at the end. Although, has Bo Bauer ever started a game? I mean, I don't know if a guy's never started and is named a captain as a senior, but the five that we had mentioned last
week. People often still think of the old terms of offense, defense, special teams. So maybe that's why Bo Bauer was brought up too. Like, it'll be his fourth year on special teams. And, you know, Brian Kelly's gone to seven captains before. You would think that if they go that way.
He has. So he deserved to be mentioned on the list.
And Jacobs three, other than Kyle Hamilton and possibly Kyron Williams, who do you think will be the next player to go to the draft after 3 years? And if either one of you missed this, I'm taking away your podcast.
Go ahead, Pete.
My Michael Mayer time to Tim Priester.
Oh, okay. Well, Michael Mayer's an easy one.
Yeah, Michael Mayer. Right. That's right. As long as you see his name on the roster when you're looking it over, that's the next one after
Kyle Hamilton. That's about as simple as it gets. Chris Tyree.
That's the good news for Notre Dame, as long as it's not a terrible decision.
Yeah, I mean, if Rocco Spindler starts this year at guard, then I imagine that would be possible.
That's bad news for Notre Dame. I don't want Rocco Spindler leaving after 3 years. They got Quentin Nelson for four.
Quentin Nelson couldn't get on the field as a freshman. Oh, man.
I'm writing a story about Tyson Ford for tomorrow, and he's already I'm going to graduate in 3 years and go pro. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
All right. There he is.
You know, I imagine we can speculate about, I already mentioned Spindler. I mean, guys that we really have no idea how good they're going to be in college. Deion Colsey, Lorenzo Styles. I don't know. But, yeah, Mayer's the easy choice, and maybe Tyree is the second choice.
Yeah, because, I mean, especially if Kyron Williams leaves and Chris Tyree is the feature back for 2022.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, 2 years ago, we would not have said Tommy Tremble wouldn't be on the Notre Dame football team when he was a redshirt freshman that had never played. And we saw him blocking in the spring. We're like, that guy blocks pretty well. He'll probably go pro in a year and a half.
Could Isaiah Foskey have a ridiculous junior year?
Right.
Yeah, that's possible. Wouldn't necessarily be a terrible thing for Notre Dame if that happened either.
Right, right.
Boy, he'd really need a great year.
But, Tommy Tremble had that year, you know, in his eyes. Yeah.
I don't think we were talking about Tommy Tremble leaving a year ago today, but
no, later just in August.
Spring. We were. And Jeffers, a couple of Houston Griffith questions. Do you think it's more likely that Houston or a transfer or DJ Brown, incoming freshman, takes the plurality of the snaps opposite Kyle Hamilton? What do you make of the rumors that Terry Joseph leaving helped bring Houston back? I know you guys were Terry fans in the abstract, but do you think new blood at safety could help, the safety coach could help Griffiths or DJ Brown's development, or would it be more of a wash in your estimation? I probably didn't need to read all of that, did I?
You said who to the what now?
And we're out of time. Thanks for joining us.
I will make that long-winded question with a brief answer, I guess. I think that Houston Griffith will take the plurality of snaps. And one criticism I heard of Terry Joseph, and I did not hear many, but this is just one of them, was that he was really intent on coaching the guys who were the frontline players who were playing. And if you were a backup, maybe you didn't get a whole lot of run from him. So in that case, Houston Griffiths would have been a backup. So this is where maybe the fresh start helps a little bit.
I'm a glass half full kind of guy. So I think the equivalent of Nick McLeod incoming transfer will get the most snaps, and Houston Griffith will be a quality third safety along with DJ Brown as number four. player to be named later is my answer.
I agree with that. I don't know who that safety is, but as Pete Sampson pointed out, there's a long time between now and the end of the whole grad transfer process. Brian Kelly, you know, had indicated, hey, we got to get moving on these kind of things. And that's understandable. But man, there's so many guys in the transfer portal that, you know, you can certainly, or even just among grad transfers, you could certainly see that happening. I still believe, as much as I have been very critical of watching the film of Houston Griffith, I still believe that he can be turned into a good player because he has the physical ability to do it.
Yeah, I'm not saying he cannot. I mean, my favorite player from the one spring practice, March 5th, in no pads, was Houston Griffith last year.
Mine too. Mine too.
I thought I'd see more of it on game day.
Yeah. And just in defense of Terry Joseph, I've said it many times, Jalen Elliott and Alohi Gilman were really good safeties. Maybe it all had to do with them, but you know, we were quick to point a finger of blame, not as quick to give credit. And I think that he deserves credit for how good those two were.
Joseph Ramaz, how significant is the change that Marcus Freeman has jolted into recruiting in the 3 weeks he's been on staff? Do you believe he'll actually be able to land some of these targets typically avoided by Notre Dame that will close the gap?
Pete, go ahead.
Super significant. I don't think you can oversell this one. And I am sort of a conservative when it comes to recruiting hype because I think it's too quickly overdone in almost all instances. I think this is Marcus Freeman is the exception to that rule, though. I think that I talked to Brian Pullian about this a year ago, sort of follow-up story on BK's pre-Camping World Bowl. I think we can be a top five recruiting operation. And Pullian's point was that Notre Dame needed to do a better job getting in fights for Will Shipley-type players and not backing down from those fights. I don't think that really happened a whole lot last cycle, but the way Marcus Freeman has gotten off out of the gates here, I think that's going to happen a hell of a lot with defensive prospects now. I think it happened with Tyson Ford last week. And I think that's huge because Notre Dame doesn't have a great recruiting head coach, so they got to have great recruiting assistants. And I think Marcus Freeman is a great, capital G, great recruiting assistant.
I cut some heat for my opening paragraph of Tyson Ford's coming to Notre Dame. And because I don't think that there was any way, I mean, Tyson Ford would not be verbally committed to Notre Dame today if Marcus Freeman wasn't the defensive coordinator. I'm not saying that Clark Lee wouldn't have landed him, but I think what you're saying, Pete, I mean, Tyson Ford being committed to Notre Dame at this point, that wouldn't have happened.
I talked to Tyson Ford last week and I asked him that question. And he was like, he didn't say no, but he said the communication with Notre Dame dropped way off. And Oklahoma came on really hard. And I don't want to like scoop my own story tomorrow, but like one note in it that I think the listeners of this podcast would probably appreciate it more than the people who actually read the story. I asked Tyson Ford how many conversations he had with Lincoln Riley. He said 6 to 10. His mom told me that he had met Lincoln Riley's wife, on a Zoom call. And I asked, well, how many conversations do you have with Brian Kelly? 0. So the fact that Notre Dame turned that around was all down to a phone call with Marcus Freeman the Thursday night before he committed on Monday, where Freeman hit all the right notes and pulled all the right levers, and wow, Notre Dame absolutely needed it.
That's a real talent. So he still has not had a conversation with Brian Kelly?
I haven't checked in every day.
Okay, I got you. I got you.
This, I talked to them on Wednesday and Thursday of last week. So it was maybe 48 hours, 72 hours after the decision.
I'm going to go throw up and get back to you guys.
I will say this. I mean, the one thing Charlie Weiss was not afraid to get involved in a battle for a five-star guy. I think it's much more likely to happen with Marcus Freeman. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Kenny Covington won with the beating Bama put on Ohio State. Brian Kelly's post-Rose Bowl press conference and the hiring of Marcus Freeman, have your feelings shifted regarding the state of the program?
These are disjointed thoughts unless I'm reading it wrong, right?
I think I expected
number one, number two is weird, and number three is awesome. So I don't know what I'm looking at, really.
I mean, I don't know that. Do you think differently about the
program? I think Marcus Freeman makes me think it's great. Marcus Freeman makes me think differently about the program. The other two things, I mean, there's nothing more different than Brian Kelly's post-Rose Bowl press conference and the hiring of Marcus Freeman that I can think of. Is there something really positive from the Rose Bowl thing I missed?
Yeah, I don't. It's all Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman makes me think differently about where the program can go. Yeah. The first two things have no impact.
Now, I agree. I don't want to get in. No, I agree with that. I mean, that's the one of the three that. Well, first of all, I mean, I didn't think the state of the program was as bad as a lot of people did after the Alabama game. But
no, of course
that's
not.
That's because we have a different perspective on the program. But, you know, I don't think Marcus Freeman is going to be at Notre Dame for a long time. So he needs to make a real rapid, significant impact. And Tyson Ford is a good start in that direction. And so is Houston Griffith coming back.
I don't want to like belabor this. I would just say like the Alabama-Ohio State thing, like Notre Dame still played Clemson in the ACC championship game. And like that game went the way that it went. Like that counts too. So, I mean, I think I'd take the Alabama game and Clemson part two together, and it would lead me to believe Notre Dame has a pretty big gap to make up, but Marcus Freeman is potentially a huge part in making that gap happen.
Yeah, I think the only thing about the Bama-Ohio State game I took away from it was kind of fun to watch somebody get blitzed that wasn't somebody else get lit up. It was enjoyable. I mean, it's like, yeah, see? It's pretty hard to beat those guys. Now you know what we're talking about.
All you have to do is tune into the 4-team playoff every year and somebody's getting their ass beat.
That's exactly right.
Jim Booney _CRS, have you heard anything about a plan for vaccinations for the players? Is there a target date for all the players being vaccinated?
August 1st.
Yeah, I was going to say, we talked about this a little offline. You can't do it in the spring, right?
Yeah, I mean, I say that sort of like flippantly, but college athletes are not in an at-risk population at all. So I would think that they would sort of be treated similarly in the spring to pretty much everyone else at Notre Dame,
right?
Student or out of season student athletes, because my understanding in the fall was like, if you were an off-season athlete in the fall, your testing was not that rigorous at all. So I don't think that would be different just because it's football for the spring.
I think a follow-up for Kelly will be when we talk to him closer to probably even before the spring, would just be, are they going to be so strict with the living situations? Like the funny joke about he was at the post-game press conference giving someone the game ball and said, by the way, you two aren't roommates anymore. Like, is it that important necessarily in the spring, or you just let it play out and have everybody be careful like the students are supposed to be careful? You know, is it that is one of the best parts of the entire season, when Brian Kelly gives out a game ball and says, by the way, you guys aren't living together anymore, just because they had to switch some things around so they wouldn't both get COVID. But yeah, I wonder if they're going to mandate how the players live in the spring, if that's necessary, or if they just mandate you don't go out and do ridiculous things because we want you at spring practice.
And a lot of them have already had COVID.
Yeah.
You don't know how many can get it a second time. You have other strains that are, you know, I just don't think that it's an issue for a 19-year-old male football player at Notre Dame in March and April. I can't imagine, you know, we're going to look at it a little bit differently as we age, but I can't imagine that that's on the forefront of their minds. We have a last question. I'm going to make you read it, O'Malley. It's a long one.
It is long. Murphy, JD, do you guys believe the way ND distributes its coaching staff makes the most sense? Would you change it to no full-time special teams coordinator with two offensive line coaches or split up linebacker coaches, for example, instead of adding linebackers to the defensive coordinator responsibilities? With Brian Polian, I guess it makes some sense since he's a recruiting coordinator, but then can ND afford to have a dedicated tight end coach like John McNulty? Basically, I think he wants the 10 coaches to not include a special teams coordinator to give help somewhere else.
I like it as is, especially when the special teams coordinator is also your recruiting coordinator. I think there's good balance with that. What I don't like is when you have one secondary coach. To me, that makes no sense. So I think the way that's distributed I'm all for it.
Yeah, and offensive line, you can get away with it. You know, you have to understand that there are grad assistants helping each one of these position coaches. So it's not like Jeff Quinn has to coach five guys at once. A large portion of practices for offensive linemen is broken down by positions, and Quinn will flip from tackles to guards or, you know, centers or whatever. I mean, I think maybe we're overthinking this a little bit. I tend to agree with Samson on this about Poling being special team / recruiting coordinator. I think both fit him and his personality perfectly. You know, one dedicated coach to tight ends. I guess I kind of see that. But like so many things, I don't think that there's one correct way here. I think a lot of it depends on, like, Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman can determine how he wants, you know, maybe he, again, I tend to agree with what Samson said about secondary. I think that should be split up. But if Marcus Freeman doesn't think that that's necessary, you know, or do you have a, you know, do you have a linebacker coach and your coordinator just is a coordinator? Then you'd have to change things with Poling and having the dual role.
Yeah, I get the question for sure. But once they added a 10th, or the rumor there was going to be a 10th assistant added in 2017, and they got Brian Poling, I was like, that's great. They're going to have a special teams. They're going to have a dedicated special teams coordinator that will do a good job instead of, you know, Scott Booker. People were ripping on his special teams coordinating skills when he was a tight ends coach for the entire tenure. So I really like having Poling as a special teams coordinator. And I think what we really, an interesting story we got to find out is how they really break down the scout team and varsity, because people see 15 offensive linemen and think Jeff Quinn's handling 15 offensive linemen. I guarantee you Chris Watt had the scout team offensive line all season long. And that's why, Pete, you brought up such an interesting point about Terry Joseph not coaching the backups enough, possibly the rumor of that happening. I think that happens everywhere, though, because I know someone told Tim and I in August, and I think we talked about it, Pete, guys like Foskey missed out on the spring because they spent their whole freshman year not getting coached by Mike Elston. Like, you just can't coach 17 guys during the season. So it's very important who your graduate assistant is coaching your big position groups like that.
Yeah, I remember going to spring practices and, like, watching the offensive line, and Quinn would have the starters on one half of the field, and then the GA or analyst would have sort of the second team on the other half of the field, and they would just sort of break it down that way. Not all the time, but a lot of the time.
And I think, like, in virtually every instance, the breakdown of a football team, when practice starts, the position coach is coaching all of them as they do their individual drills. And then it becomes a, you know, goes from a one-on-one situation to, you know, an isolated situation to the full team working together. So it works.
And to clarify, Mike Elston coaches all those players in the spring. We watch it. We used to watch it from above, right? Mike Elston. But I'm saying, when the season starts, Mike Elston can't coach the 17th defensive lineman when they're preparing for Clemson. I mean, those guys are nowhere near him.
Well, and the 17th defensive lineman isn't getting meaningful snaps in practice anyway as the practice progresses. So it's an interesting question. I think there's more ways than one to do it. And I think every team and every coordinator, you know, has his own style, and I think it, you know, tends to fit what they believe works best. So, okay, long question, long answer. We appreciate you joining us today. We'll be back next Monday for Irish Illustrated Insider.